This episode is brought to you by CEP Compression Australia. CEP Compression brings the user more energy, greater endurance, and enhanced performance during activities. For a discount at CEP, use the following code online, local legends in running. Welcome to the Brisbane and Australian-based Local Legends in Running podcast. My name is Ollie Jones and I'm the host of the show and the founder of the Local Legends in Running brand, including online running coaching services. This podcast primarily involves a one-on-one conversation format with Australian and global elite and amateur runners, coaches, exercise scientists, and event directors, where you hear insights, opinions, and stories you'd otherwise struggle to find scrolling online. Today in Season 4, Episode 95, South Australian runner Fraser Darcy comes on the show. As I commenced the Zoom meeting for this episode, Fraser arrived on the screen with the full setup, a microphone and proper headphones, as if he was a pro. And there was some truth to that, actually. He's featured on the For the Kudos podcast this year, a Road 2 series leading into the Sydney Marathon with Andy Buchanan. So if you get a chance, check that one out on Spotify and other platforms if you can. The main reason I had him on the Local Legends in Running podcast, and I guess an influencing factor, was his third place in the recent Melbourne Marathon, where he ran a 2:17. Funny enough, a few months earlier at Sydney, the Sydney Major Marathon now, he'd run a 2:17 as well. So it's quite funny to learn of those times. I was privy to learning about his PBs. They've almost all happened this year and his 10Ks last year. So he's in some prime form over the last year in his early 30s, running as much as 200K a week. He also coaches for that group called Run As One, a prominent running group in South Australia involving Izzy Bat Doyle and the Cox Brothers. Riley finishes by talking about his training setup and his week and then future events for this year and next. So I hope you enjoy as always. Thank you. Very good. Well, welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast. We've got Fraser Darcy here.
Hello. And lovely to be on the show this week.
Excellent. I was just talking to you off air. It's great to have someone who's got a bit of a podcast experience. You've featured on the For the Kudos FTK this year in a Patreon kind of spin-off and a runoff series as well. How's your experience been there with Andy, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've been on with Andy Buchanan. We started in July, sort of doing a Road to Sydney and World Champs Patreon-only series, and Riley Wolf is the host, and it's been really fun. At first, I was sort of brought on as a bit more of a relatable character for, like, a Sydney Marathon being a major, trying to have some focus there, and then I'm also listening along to Andy recap his training, and as our national record holder, trying to learn a few things from him, and also have a bit of a joke along the way. And it's been great and lots of ups and downs in the series, but we've kept it going, which has been unusual for a Patreon series to sort of extend past our races. And I think that's just testament to the amount of enjoyment we've had and Yeah, it's been great. We're still going. I'm not sure when it'll end. Maybe when the people give us enough bad feedback, but yeah, for now it's there and on Patreon and having
Excellent.
fun.
Well, yeah, well, yeah, get amongst it and tune into that one, because there's so many platforms now, isn't there, Fraser, and opportunities for runners to jump on these things. When I started this years ago, there weren't many around, and it's just great to, like, I'm Brisbane based, as I told you off air, just to have guests all over the country on this podcast. You're a South Australian based, and the main premise, I guess, Fraser, to have you on here was I was just sort of scrolling through the Melbourne Marathon results from the weekend, and I did watch a lot of it. And I didn't see you come through personally on the live stream, but as I scroll through, I noticed in third place for the men's, at least in the Melbourne Marathon, was you at a 2:17 for that event. So you must be pleased with that result.
Yeah, definitely. I thought it was possible on the day. However, my lead into Melbourne was very different to a normal marathon, and running Melbourne itself was a bit of a last minute decision because I was always aiming for Sydney, and I was doing this Road to Sydney sort of series with Andy, and then I had the World Mountain and Trail Running Championships, and then it came to about a month and a half out from Melbourne, and Riley Cox, who runs Runners One, he asked if I was going to get an entry to Melbourne. And I was going to go as a coach and supporter, and I thought I might as well get a bib in the marathon, and maybe I can pay someone for a long run. Then, as time went on, I sort of, recovered pretty well from World Mountain Champs, and I thought I had one last marathon in me for the year. And driving over on the weekend before, and I was just like, well, this can either go one of two ways. I can either have a really good marathon and yeah, come third or second, or who knows first if everything goes pear-shaped for Jack Rayner, but or it can also go pear-shaped for me very easily. I was very worried about it sort of all coming to a head and my year finishing terribly. But I was really happy to come third and sort of get a result that was somewhat expected of me given on paper how I'd been going this year. But also I knew that inside my mind, I was almost terrified of having a big blow up and all going wrong. And then also having that reflect my year, which wouldn't have been great. So, yeah, I was it's funny you say you missed me coming into the finish. It's a good watch. I was pretty excited to just be done and finish at the MCG.
Yeah, I've been out for a long run that morning with my running group up here in Brisbane, and I was straight to the couch, Fraser, to watch, of course, the event in general, but also the athletes that I know and I coach and I run with. And yeah, it's just quite hectic to fit that along with a wife and kids who are demanding your attention at, 8 o'clock in the morning, Brisbane time anyway. But speaking of recent form, you're at Sydney in a fourth place there, and I was quite gobsmacked really with how close these times were for you, both in that 2:17 range. Like, how do they differ both for you, your experience at Sydney and Melbourne?
Completely different, to be honest. I ran Sydney last year as well, and I ran 2:21 there. And that race was, I was just running in the lead women's pack and then sort of kicked down at the end and chased down as many people as I could. And that was the game plan for this year. I ran in the lead women's pack with Safwan Hassan. And at first, we were on 2:15 pace, and then we slowed to 2:20 pace. And then at that point, I just executed the same game plan and negative split the second half, and myself, Steve McKenna, and Safwan Hassan were like the only three people to negative split at Sydney. But the way I finished, I felt really strong and like loved the marathon. Came across the line at Sydney just ecstatic and kind of not how you expect to feel at the end of a marathon where you're all beat up and questioning your life decisions about like, oh, can I even keep going and all that sort of stuff. I was just so happy. And so in Melbourne, my experience, I wanted that experience. I wanted to be dead by the end and really finding where the limit was. And that meant that I couldn't just go out in that first half and run with a group and take it easy. I put the pressure on myself and just wanted to run scared the whole event because I was already scared of blowing up. So I thought I'm just going to try and bank as much time as possible and went out at sort of 2:14, 2:15 pace. Ended up on track for that until 30, 32 Ks. And then had a really good battle with myself to get to the finish, and spent the last 10 Ks sort of battling some cramps, and still managed to run okay, and yeah, come third and 2:17, a bit dirty on myself that I got passed to come in into third, but I was still also very happy to even out and run 2:17 in the end, which was yeah, nice.
Yeah, excellent. Can you sort of talk on behalf of, well, your opinion of the event in general, like the positives and the areas that they may need to consider moving forward? And so it's always hard as a sole runner to, like, your opinion is one of obviously a runner who's elite, right? And that's hard to reflect someone who's hours behind you. But as one of the faster runners, like one, well, I'll start with the pros, right? Probably a good thing to start with the pros that have come my way. And Tim Crosby is on the podcast last episode. Fraser, as I told you off air, and he spoke wonderfully about the event and in general. He can talk forever, that guy. But obviously, finishing in the MCG is such a unique experience, and there's so many people that they can sort of fit in around that area that obviously have a great view of the runners coming in there. It's obviously you experience the city of Melbourne itself, like it follows, I guess, directions in where the athletes can really t absorb and take in the city areas that are quite prominent. One bit of feedback that's come my way, and even from Tim himself, actually, is just that sort of traffic towards the end there for the faster end of runners finishing and coming through the field. Is that something you experienced yourself? And what do you think they can do as a one day event to maybe improve that?
Yeah, it is very tricky trying to get all the events to finish inside the G. I ran the 10K last year, and when you're finishing the 10K as one of the fast runners, there's no one in the G. And I was a little bit flat, to be honest, with, oh, this is not the experience that I sort of dreamt of finishing in the G. And then this year, when you're coming in with the marathon and you start to see it after running for 2 hours and finally it appears on your radar, and you're like, at first, the 1K to go, you're like, how is that 1K away? It seems so far. And then you get closer, and yeah, you're starting to mix in with a few other people. I was aware that it was a little bit congested, but it's not too bad, to be honest. Like, where Melbourne sits in an event, like, yeah, it's not Sydney Marathon, but it's not Adelaide Marathon, and Adelaide has even worse congestion at the finish, so you are getting a better product as a runner. I think, like, just a little bit more streamlined, and maybe a few more security guards knowing what's going on at that section. Because it seems to be that every time you're there's a volunteer that might be their first time sort of shepherding people out the way, and they don't haven't been told the right information, or a security guard hasn't been told the right information, and they suddenly miss you. So it's just a little bit more cleaned up around that, and the event's fine in my opinion at the moment, and it can continue to grow with more people.
Yeah, speaking of growth, it seems that the marathon event itself is probably where it could potentially grow in depth, and that takes nothing away from your performance. You run to whoever turns up to the event, right, to come third. But you compare it to a Sydney, and you've run a similar time. I didn't get your exact place looking through results earlier, Fraser. You're in a sort of about 30th, 20 to 30th, is that right, at Sydney?
In Sydney, no, I think I was top 20.
Top 20.
I believe, yeah. Don't know off the top of my head. I was 13th the year before,
Yeah.
and then a few more spots back because there are a few more Australians this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, the depth in Melbourne is pretty good. I think, like, on average, the last couple of years, 217. I mean, we had six Australian men go sub 219, which is the most Australian men do that at a race since Gold Coast 2023. So people question the 2:14, 2:15 winning time by Jack is not that great, but from an adept point of view, it was actually pretty deep for Australians in that across that top 10 men.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And we get so used to recognizing or thinking that every marathon is going to be like a Berlin or a Valencia and flat and fast and worldly. Like Tim spoke on the podcast the other week about it, really promoting it as an internal Australian event and New Zealanders, but then also an event for all, like not just at the elite end, but for everyone. And the bulk of the event at these, well, the bulk of the field rather at these events is recreational amateur runners, and Tim gave me an average time for the Melbourne Marathon, which they need to work at to sort of understand the numbers coming into that area there too. It must have been from memory of sort of closer to 4 hours in general. So you've got to think about the whole crowd itself too, hey?
Yeah, and it's a good thing you brought up, everyone wants a marathon to be like Valencia and Berlin, because I get a bit shitted off, really, to be everyone's always doing a marathon to chase the fastest time possible. And you
Yes.
do all this training, and you pray for the weather to be fast, and just sometimes it doesn't happen, and people are disappointed off one day of running, and they've had 10 good weeks of running in the lead up. I think Melbourne is a great course because it has some hills at the back end, so that, like, a marathon is a challenging experience, and you need a course that reflects that. Yes, there's times where you can go fast and chase a fast time at Gold Coast or Ballarat, But Sydney is a great course for a marathon challenge. It's just difficult to get into because it's got a ballot and there's lots of internationals that will want to run it. But Melbourne now is really neatly positioned where, provided you've got quick fingers on the internet, you can get yourself a bib and then, yeah, have a great first 30Ks of the race, pretty flat, runs through some scenic places. And then if you're good enough, you'll be okay through the tan and the hills. And then you finish knowing that you've run a pretty good marathon. The time, it doesn't always have to be the end goal in a marathon.
I think sometimes it's lost to the runners that are new to the sport who just don't see the bigger picture. They want to sort of run a marathon, but there's no plans after that. So what's going through their mind is, okay, let's get to the quickest one and run the quickest time. It's definitely a point there that you can enjoy the event for what it is. If it's hilly, scenic, it's a destination event as well. So yeah, those points are definitely taken. Before we continue rambling on too much, let's get to know you a little bit because, as you know, Fraser, that this podcast, well, I am based in Brisbane. It goes out everywhere over the world, but I guess most of the listeners would be Brisbane and Gold Coast based, actually. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. We spoke about South Australia, but what are you doing for work there, and where are you actually based there? And anything around friends, family, hobbies, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, hello to all the Queensland listeners out there. It's not often I get to talk to Queensland people. I'm based in Brighton in Adelaide, which is near Glenelg, where the City to Bay finishes, actually. So, little beachside suburb. I live here with my girlfriend in just a very small unit. And I've only been living here for the last 6 months or so. Before then, I had lived in Caughan, which is 4 hours north of Adelaide. And I lived there for majority of the last 3 to 4 years. But before then I was living in Adelaide, and I used to do a lot of work as an outdoor education instructor, and I'd just go away working at times, or I'd work in Adelaide on small programs, and then I sort of gave that away, and I've done a lot of different jobs. But at the moment I'm working as a running coach, and I do some work for FCK, and I'm also this week I've started a new job as a research assistant. So that's just an example of one of the random jobs that I always seem to have on the go. But yeah, mostly South Australian and proud to be South Australian.
Yeah, it's great. We sort of seem to hear a lot more about the Melbourne runners from a Brisbane point of view. Obviously, there's a few runners, Easybat Doyle and the Cox brothers are out there, and a few others. But I don't know how that sort of comes about. But yeah, it's great to hear that background and set some context here before we continue. What I thought would be interesting just to look at next, Fraser, we can always sort of research PBs online and find out what they are. It's pretty easy when you're a runner of your caliber, type in Fraser Darcy World Athletics or just athletics and your profile will pop up. But just some stories behind some of these times. And it seems like I screenshotted your PBs here without the destination of where they were. I'm assuming that are you looking at the agenda now, Fraser? The two marathons to turn up. Why is that the case? Now is that Melbourne and Sydney at 17:38 and 2:17:24?
Yeah, because of Sydney has too much net downhill, so it's not actually record eligible, because in the first 3Ks of Sydney, you drop so much elevation that it just ruins that statistic that World Athletics have. So Melbourne is technically my PB of 2:17:38, and Sydney is my fastest time ever. It's like Boston is for Americans. They can't claim that.
Yeah, we've just obviously spoken about those. Let's get back to the half then. That's a 64:55, which is a wicked time. Where was that one, and how's your experience?
Yeah, that was at Launceston earlier this year, and very similar to Melbourne, I
Oh, they
wasn't
changed
planning.
that. Yeah, that used to be a focus on the 10K, but more of a half focus now. Hey, tell us about that.
I wasn't planning on doing Launceston. That was 3 or 4 weeks after Ballarat, and then my result at Ballarat this year, where I ran 2:18, basically got me an entry into Launceston through my connection with Runners One, and they were offering a few entries to us, and sort of came down and wasn't. I'd just come off a marathon, so I wasn't too sure as to where my half marathon capability would be. Got in a fast pack, enjoyed my time, and just raced a few guys to the end there, and was really stoked to break 65 minutes, because that was a goal that I'd had for the year, but I just didn't know where it was going to fit in, and I thought maybe I'd do Gold Coast half, but to get it ticked off at Lonnie was awesome. Super cold day and just super fast.
The weather down there is always amazing, and the events obviously lined up to cater for that. That sub 65 in my mind really puts you at the pointy end of Australian running. Where do you know where you'd sort of be ranked with that time amongst the Australian men? Would it sort of be top top 15-ish to 20 maybe. There's a lot
Oh, I'm
peppering that sort of 64 and 3 mark though, isn't there?
not. Yeah, at the moment, yeah, maybe top 20 to 30, top 40. Over all time though, I think it's like top 100,
Yeah,
which
all
is,
times different story, isn't it? It's crazy.
yeah, but it's I'm higher on the half marathon list than I am the marathon, which really intrigues me a lot. And but like I still think I have an even better half marathon in me if I had a specific half marathon block.
Yeah, and it sort of follows that generic rule of double your half, add 10, which would get you about 218, which is close to 217 there. Yeah, Launceston, that has changed a bit from that 10K and a focus more so heading towards that half marathon. So highly recommend people exploring it from anywhere around Australia to head down there. Let's head down the list. As we head down the list, the events do get shorter, and you probably don't do much for this anymore. But you got a 349.71. 1500 meters.
Yeah, it's funny. These are ranked in World Athletics point scores. So that's why the half marathon is at the top and then the marathons. But then my 1500, I hadn't raced a 1500 since high school, which is 10, 15 years ago, up until this year. And then because 1500s are always talked about on different podcasts and training partners are always keen to race 15s, I thought, okay, I'll just run one, give it a go. Ran my first one and ran 3:52 in a local club B race. I shouldn't have been in the B race, but I didn't have a time, so they just put me there. And then, yeah, 3:52 was pretty good. And then 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later, we had state championships, and I went off the front, maybe 1.5 laps to go, and ended up coming fourth and running 3:49. And again, not a specific 1500 meter block or anything, but just went for it and really enjoyed it. I want to do some more 1500s over summer just because they're done in 4 minutes and it's completely different to a marathon.
I was going to say, is that something you sort of recommend for the marathoners at any level to try out to sort of truly see how fast you can run? It sort of gets you to understand where that speed is and sort of set everything in training from that sort of point.
100%, like running is a recreational pursuit. We do it for fun. We do it for fitness. Go have some fun. Go join up a local athletics club and just, I want to run an 800 this season just to see what happens. And, no one's expecting you to be a champion in every event, but if you can have a different level of understanding of these events, it'll make you appreciate what happens at the pointy end of the sport. Like I now appreciate a 3:45 guy a lot more than I did before.
Yeah, it's just crazy how like within sort of 10 to 15 seconds there's just so many runners Australian wide too. Like we have so many even sub 3:35. Now it's probably almost 10 in the country and training overseas that is too. If we head to the 5K then, obviously 5K road and 5,000 differ, 5,000's on the track for those who don't know and look up these results and often the location will indicate that. I've now got the website open to give me more detail. And I'm looking at South Athletic Stadium. I don't know what that is, but probably your main stadium there. 14:16 and 14:13 on the road.
Yeah, 14:13, our state 5K road champs, and that was a great race. I went out pretty hard. Adrian Potter went out even harder, and yeah, he ran really well. He won the race in like 13:50 something, and then I came second in 14:13, and then my 5,000 meter race, 14:16. That was again second to Adrian Potter. That time I ran 10 laps in front of him, and then he just came around and cleaned up the last 2 laps. And I hung on for second and a nice little PB at the time. So, yeah, pretty happy with those times. I'd like to try and run like 14 minutes or quicker this summer, though.
Yeah, and every time down this list, I've just realized is 2025 bar the 10Ks. So the 10K on the road and the track, that was last year, both in October, actually. You sort of looks like you're when it rains, it pours kind of a thing here. We've got PBs close to each other, like this 10K on the road and track, 31:26, 31:33, respectively.
Yeah, they. I need to readjust them because I was coming off an injury when I ran both the. That's the 31:26 at Melbourne. That was the 10K I was talking about earlier, and then 31:33. I did that 2 weeks later on the track at our state 10K, and yeah, they don't reflect my current fitness. But it's always nice to have a few cheap PBs ready to go at any time, just if I need to build some confidence.
Yeah, and I dare say most of the listeners of this podcast are road runners, but the Mountain Classic sits there at the bottom of our list at 112, Now, I've got no other details
Oh.
other than the time. Is that a half distance? What is that?
That was 14.9 kilometers with almost 900 meters up and down
Oh,
at
that's
the
okay. That makes a lot more sense.
at the World Mountain and Trail Running Championships last month. So, but I'm with you. Like, I sort of view that race. I viewed that race as like this will require very similar effort to a half marathon, and that's how I paced it.
Yeah, excellent. What's your idea with that trail stuff moving forward? Is it something you're still interested in? Will you dabble in that as you focus on the roads and track?
Probably less. In the past, it was where I got the most competition when I was not really a much of a competitive club or track or road runner. I was just racing trails to sort of win and go well. But now I'm sort of getting really good competition in the marathon and enjoying that and finding out how fast I can run. And so the trail stuff sort of it requires a lot more logistics and effort, and it doesn't have as much reward when, yeah, you fly interstate, go come second or third in a race, and have to pay 2 or 3 grand in all flights and accommodation to get out to Whoop Whoop. So yeah, I'll probably put some of that stuff to bed now for a little bit, but I do have some long-term like trail running goals that like that's what motivated me to get into the sport. So I do need to go and experiment with them one day, but just the focus is on the marathon at the moment, I think, for next year.
Excellent. Now, Fraser, what the listeners and I love to hear about is the sort of running background story, where it all started, and being a South Australian man, it'd be interesting to hear about where it all kicked off for you as a young kid. Where do you think it did? You may have spoken about this on other podcasts or For the Kudos, I don't know. But where do you think was the point that it started to head towards this kind of elite running now, really?
Yeah, well, my story is a little bit different. So if I sort of am I if I'm waffling on too long, please interject. But basically, I ran in school because my brother was running to supplement his footy training and get fit for football. So younger brother did everything my older brother did, but I would just go up to into school sports days and I'd get my ass handed to me by people like Jacob Cox, and I never really followed running outside of school because like Jacob Cox would always beat me, so what was the point?
Can I
And
interject
then
there? Sorry. Are you guys the same age? There you go.
and
Bit of
so
context. Continue.
yeah, at the time, and same with Max Stevens, who
Yes.
almost made a Commonwealth Games team. And so I was thinking, geez, these guys are so good at running, like how am I ever going to get this good? And little did I know they were actually training for it at athletics clubs while I was just playing footy and cricket and tennis. And then after school, I really enjoyed my running, and just our parents lived on the back of a reserve. So I just go trail running all the time and probably log 100K weeks without really recording it. But I do a few races here and there. And with my outdoor ed work, it sort of got to a point where I'd train up for 10 weeks, really consistent, do a race, and then I'd go away and work somewhere for 4 to 6 weeks. And so I would lose all that routine and rhythm. And then I'd pick my running back up again and just sort of, if I had time, do that. And that went on for a long time, really, like 6, 7 longer years, really. Did a marathon in there along the way and just enjoyed my running. And then COVID came along and I just got a little bit annoyed with races being cancelled. And I was getting good at rock climbing at the time too, which is just an outdoor ed sort of pursuit. And yeah, I was trying to get good at running and climbing, and then all these COVID shutdowns were happening, and I was just getting so frustrated. So I gave away the running for a little bit and just focused on climbing. Got really good at climbing, and then decided to move to Corn, which is where there's lots of good climbing. There was one problem in my plan though. No one lives in Corn, so I didn't have any climbing partners to really go climbing with, and the price of petrol went up by a lot, so no one wanted to drive out there. So suddenly I had all this time on my hands. But no one to climb with. So I started running again. And that was about the time of like the 2021 Tokyo Olympics. So, like, sitting at home, watching TV and seeing the athletics on TV, and you're like, oh, I might go for a run again. And yeah, see, just have a bit of fun. And yeah, basically, I'd pushed my climbing so far that I needed to either really commit or just let it go by the wayside. And I chose to let it go and I started running again. And then, basically, from 2022, I just started entering races just to measure myself up against the competition. And the last 4 years, that's been the process of just training and racing just to see how good I can be and who I can beat or who I can get beaten by and measuring myself up against myself. And it's taken me all the way back to Adelaide now and led me to a life of where I coach and I write about running and I talk about running. So it's been pretty good, but still always the goal for me is just to see how much I can push it for myself. But it really, I'd say the second phase of my career started back in COVID when, well, at the end of COVID, when I basically lived in a small country town with nothing to do and all this time to train.
Now, you sent me your email, obviously, for me to send through different things for today's conversation. 94 was the number in that email. Does that mean that you are 31 this year?
Correct. 31 on Sunday.
Okay, so sort of again, set some context about where this journey's led to now. It'd be interesting to sort of head into your sort of training setup before we talk about any training, but where do you train, who with, coach, that kind of thing? What does that look like for you from South Australia?
For a lot of my career, I didn't have a coach, didn't have a group, and I just run to how I felt or run from what I read in a book or run to what I listened to on Inside Running or FTK. And that's what gave me the sort of experimental mindset, because running is supposed to be fun, and the training you enjoy is the training you adapt to. So I did most of my running like that. And then when I moved back to Adelaide, I got involved with Runners One. And so I've had to shift a lot of my training to what the group does, which has been a different experiment for me of training with the group and jumping in with speed work. But I'm my own coach. I use Jacob now as a bit of a sounding board, and Riley, his brother. Basically, they'll tell me if I'm doing something ridiculously stupid, or they'll give me confidence in what training I have done to sort of target a certain time in a race. So I wouldn't say that they're my coaches, but they're definitely good sounding boards, which is funny because Jacob used to beat me 12, 15 years ago and still does beat me. I'm yet to beat him in a race, so it's good that he can provide advice at least to me.
Yeah, no, just touch on Runners One because yeah, that name's come across my Instagram a few times. I've got a feeling that is connected to those Cox brothers in South Australia. Probably naive question because I think they're a pretty big group in South Australia. Just tell us a little bit about that group.
So Runners One was set up by Riley Cox
Yeah.
and his partner Izzy Bett Doyle, and it basically started out with Riley offering a training program to his physio boss, and then it has blown up from there because the way Adelaide geographically is set up, it's pretty easy for people to drive 20 minutes into the city, do the session, and then go work in the city. And with that, we can get like 100 people to the sessions and massive group. There's a coffee shop, and it all didn't start like that. It started with 20, 30 people, and Jacob's a big part of that and sort of setting the culture around it and the performances. But now it's at a level where there's 100 people that come to the sessions twice a week, and many more that are coached online in remote on remote training programs. So, I might coach 20 or 30 people that I've never met, but live in places like Queensland and rural South Australia.
Yeah, right. I hadn't known that was so many on your books anyway. That's probably a great question. Before we get into your training, I didn't plan to ask and go into this, but just tell us a bit about your coaching and yeah, how that looks when it is remote. And I do a little bit myself too through the local legends in running brand, but how does that sort of go for you in the week?
Yeah, it's good being part of such a big group with Runners One, because we have 100 people that say come to the session on Tuesday, Friday. So anyone that's on a program that comes out to the session, we all have the similar session. So it might be 1K reps for the fast guys, 800 meter reps for someone else, 700 meter reps, but it's all the same sort of template. And that's the same for the remote people as well, but we just sort of jig things around a little bit so that it's a bit more time based. And people fill out a survey and we sort of ask a few questions, team up with someone that might relate to, their sort of coaching style. And from there, it's just like how any other coaching works. Frequent communication via email, Excel spreadsheets, following on Strava, sending a few texts, phone calls after they haven't run for a couple of weeks and trying to work out if they're going okay or they've fallen off the face of the earth. But, yeah, I really enjoy the remote coaching. I really enjoy coaching slower runners because you have less variables to work with, and therefore you get more return when they run a big PB. I
Yeah,
like
you see
that.
the improvement. Yeah. Yeah, so through the week, we'll get to Monday to Sunday for your training, but within the week, how often are you running with people? And just to clarify, are you running with athletes you're coaching within that group?
Yeah, so I'll start with like Monday. Mondays I always keep to myself. I guess when I lived out in Corn, I ran 7 days a week by myself, and so I am probably a bit of an introvert and do like a bit of alone time. Mondays are just easy by myself, but then Tuesdays are always with the group in the morning. And yeah, like we have 100 people at the session, but it all works around a small loop. And that's a great way for me. If I'm coaching, I'll be able to like fully touch base with everyone and ask questions and motivate. But if I'm in the session as well, then it's actually really nice when you're doing like a session around a 1K loop and then you're like getting tired, but then suddenly you go past someone that you coach and you're like, oh, okay, got to be a bit of a role model here. Like push it, keep the pace honest. And then they'll like, go Fraser. And you're just like, cool. It's like I'm being in a race. So yeah, it's really good to have like being able to run with, and I'm talking about like 30-minute 5K runners, like old ladies that are just cheering you on. So yeah, that's Tuesday morning. And then Wednesday mornings, I do tend to run with Jess Stenson and Jacob every now and then. But if I'm a bit busy, I don't run with them. And then Thursdays, again, another day where I like to keep to myself. And sometimes I'll do a session by myself on a Thursday just because I think it is good to do sessions by yourself every now and then because we're often racing by ourselves. So you can't always have the luxury of a group to support and encourage you and make you feel like you're special. It's nice to just go it alone sometimes. And then Fridays are another session day for the group. So I'll either just do an easy jog there or jump in with a session or coach. And then Saturday's another day where I run by myself, or we have a trail group that sometimes meets up, and that's a lot smaller group, but then you get a lot different vibe, which is really cool from it. It's probably more similar to the groups you've been a part of where you do know everyone's name and you can have a good conversation. And then finally Sunday long run, which is the best time to have a big group because yeah, you can just jump in a group of people and yeah, talk smack for an hour and a half. And then when you need to do your extra hour at the end, yeah, that's where you can get your alone time and kick on.
Yeah, great. So weekly mileage, is that sort of consistent? Could you give us a range through the year? Obviously, I'll ebb and flow between tapering and preparation for, or sorry, post events, but where do you sort of land for mileage?
Around 180 to 200 or 220 would be like, if
Wow.
I'm hitting, yeah, 200, 220, I'm pretty happy. If I'm hitting 180, there's probably a lot of intensity in there, but I'm more happy with 200, 220.
That's huge. That's huge. A question that's come to mind, again, it's not on the agenda, but injuries. Have they played any part in the last sort of 5 years with that mileage?
Yeah, definitely. Like when I started getting more into serious training, I think I struggled with shin splints a bit and a bit of tendonitis. And that was pretty frustrating. But every injury, I sort of try and tell myself it's like an opportunity to get better at managing it for the next injury. I had like a tendonitis issue. My sister thinks it might have been bone stress, but I never went and got it checked. I had that March 2024, and that carried on for like a month when it probably should have just been a 1 week injury. And yeah, since then I've only had one more injury around that this time last year actually with the Melbourne 10. I had what I thought was maybe a hip stress sort of injury, but it turned out to be just a really big cyst and labral tear. So touch wood, I've been uninjured now for 12 months straight. So, and that's like, I'm probably more proud of that than I am some of my PBs because you hear so many elite runners that seem to get injuries and then have setbacks where, yeah, like just 12 months of consistent running will do wonders for you.
Yeah, so what do you credit the uninjured phase here in the last 12 months to? Is it consistency? Are you doing some strength work in there? How do you manage such a high mileage? Like for most people running out there, they're not running 180Ks, as you know. What do you think it's for you that keeps you there?
Probably consistency and the amount I eat. I probably eat quite a lot, which I like. And you look on Instagram, like I look like a bigger guy, and it's not something I really care about too much. But like people make fun of me when I have a big bowl of oats after training sometimes, and they go, "Oh wow, like that's such a massive bowl of oats, and you just eat oats straight." And I've just got this massive bowl of oats, and I'm like, "Yeah, well, that's what you got to do to like fuel your body." Because then, they're worrying about my how much oats and how much food I'm eating, but then questioning how I can run so much. So it's like, well, it's the two are related. Like, you got to eat lots, and I go to bed at 9 a.m., 9 p.m. So it all starts there, and doing a little bit of gym work is good, just to be aware of injuries. But yeah, and taking time. Like, I spend a lot of time running trails and doing outdoor aid work and getting a very strong body. So there's a lot to be said about, going bushwalking 5 weeks in a row and then doing some running and just building up a strong body in my early 20s. But there is also a lot to be said for eating a lot and enjoying your food.
Yeah, I love that. Straight to nutrition first and sleep. They are absolutely number two in my opinion. And I think the nutrition's the one that a lot of runners get wrong, and particularly changing it when that mileage does increase. Is it something you notice that when you are running more or on days that you run more individually that you are eating a more or high intake?
Yeah, I definitely try and keep, like, I eat a lot of bread. And so on days where I've done lots of running, I might eat a couple of extra sandwiches or a couple of extra bits of toast, or especially at dinner time, like a bit of bread and butter, or maybe a bit of extra rice and pasta. So yeah, definitely on, like, especially before a long run, like, I'll always have a big bowl of pasta on Saturday lunch. And then Saturday dinner is always a big bowl of rice. And those are the non-glamorous things of running that probably people tend to look past when they see the fancy results. But yeah, like, you got to eat, like, because it makes the running so much more enjoyable.
Yeah, let's stay at this point for a bit because I think it's important. Just give us a very quick rundown of a Sunday. You finish your Sunday long run, which obviously is the longest. What does breakfast, lunch, dinner look like quickly?
So wake up in the morning, 2 bits of toast and honey and a black coffee, then run, start the run 1 hour later. Finish the run and have probably like a cup and a half worth of rolled oats. That's like a dry cup and a half. Put that in a bowl, an equal amount of water, and smash that down. That's probably like 10 o'clock. And then 12 o'clock, I'm having a big lunch, and that might be a baguette with sandwiches and tuna, cheese. And then Sunday night, we often have takeaway fish and chips. So, like, $30 worth of fish and chips between me and my girlfriend, or I'll cook some sort of like Sunday roast type meal.
And a big sugar guy, do you hit some of the sweet stuff between those meals?
Nah, that's probably where, yeah, I don't touch any of that. Like, if I'm hungry, I should eat some bread and butter, or bread and honey, bread and apricot jam, or a little bit of rice, because yeah, that's the good stuff.
Yeah, well, let's move into running coming up. There's not too much longer left of this year. Obviously, we've got November and December. And as you'd know, summer kind of turns to track for most runners, or sort of an off season where they train to get really fit, or an off season where they go the other way. They eat more and drink more, maybe. But what does it look like for you in the next few months, training and race wise, but then also the big ticket items for 2026?
To finish off the year, it's probably a plan to just get a little bit faster and enjoy the track. I've come off a massive year, have a massive base, and this is the same sort of strategy I'm going with a lot of my people I coach, is that I know training gets difficult around the end of the year, like Christmas, New Year's, when work's getting busy. So it's kind of like trying to squeeze out every little bit of running beforehand and just, dropping the distances down. So we've got our state 5,000 meter champs coming up in 3.5 weeks. And then I might try and run a few 1500s, see how I go, and then probably pack the track season up before the end of the year, so that I can start the year fresh and start getting back into some high mileage for 2026. I might do a little bit of track in the start of 2026, but the goals are definitely marathon related, and I've got my eye on Ballarat Marathon, maybe Gold Coast, maybe Sydney, maybe Melbourne. Just depends on, I guess, how, like, they sort of the year is progressing, really, and what's on offer, both in fields and pacing jobs and stuff like that.
Yeah, so if we fast forward like maybe what 10, 15 years and you look back at your career, like what event do you think will be the one that stands out? Do you think it will be the marathon?
I think it will be the marathon. It's hard to say because things like the mountain champs are such pivotal moments in my career, just from a personal sort of standpoint. And even like a 5K park run like 4 years ago, where you break 15 minutes for the first time. I think they are such big turning points in my life as a runner that I'll always look back onto them. But I would like to look back in 10, 15 years as a marathoner with maybe 2:12 would be nice, 2:11. But it's hard to get excited about specific numbers because it's more about the block or the race. I'm probably more excited about my Sydney race than I am Melbourne. Very similar time, but like two vastly different races. So yeah, it's hard to pick an event, but I'm sure there'll be one where there's a perfect training block, perfect weather, perfect competition, and then come across the line in first place. That'd probably be it, actually. A marathon where I win, something like Melbourne or Gold Coast, first Australian. That'd be pretty cool.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, well, Fraser, thank you for jumping on here today. Like I said, I do get guests all over Australia come on here, as we spoke about, as elite as Andy Buchanan and then runners down the road that I run with on a weekly basis. So it's great to have you from over there in South Australia talk about your running, what it's like over there too, and hopefully there's always something that runners and listeners resonate with in what people do. And my advice always is that we can't just follow exactly what someone does, but if we can take sort of snippets away from all these runners and things that they share, then there's something we can learn.
Yeah, definitely. And if it was, if I had the opportunity to give advice to the listeners, it would just be run, and if you enjoy it, keep running. And if you stop enjoying it, don't force yourself to. It's meant to be fun. Too many people get injured because they think they have to run. You're allowed to stop and then pick it up again when you enjoy it.
Yeah, it's so important. Fun increases engagement and the ability to do the activity you're trying to do. So that's great advice. Well, thanks again. I'll just hit pause here and have a chat to you off air, but thank you again.
Thank you.
You're looking for a little bit more guidance and coaching for 2025 and 26. Touch base on the Local Legend in Running Instagram page and happy to talk further to you. I coach a number of athletes on their way to races such as 10K, half marathons, and marathon events. Welcome.